Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and today we begin our program by taking a look at voice disorders. Did you know that April 16th is the annual World Voice Day? I think it was first celebrated, or at least established in Brazil back in 1999 as an International Day of Awareness, Recognition, and Celebration of the Human Voice. And as someone who kind of relies on his voice all day long, talking to classes and on the air, it's pretty important to me. And you know what? It's important to all of us. I'm sure it's important to you as well as to me. Two guests, really experts in this area to talk with us today, Dr. Seth Daly and Sherry Zelazny, both from the Voice and Swallow Clinic at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. Seth is an assistant professor in the surgery department in the School of Medicine and Public Health, and Sherry is a senior clinical speech pathologist and adult voice manager. And the state-of-the-art voice clinic is one of a kind in technology. It has great diagnostic capabilities and a whole lot more. Why should I talk about it? Why don't I let them talk about it? Okay, we'll let them talk, and we'll take your questions to it. 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. Sherry Zelazny, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And Dr. Seth Daly, thank you for coming by again, too. I really appreciate it.
Great to be here, as always.
Tell us a little bit more about the clinic itself, just to get things rolling. You know, I started to talk about it, and...
Certainly.
Yeah.
The Voice and Swallow Clinic is sort of a unique entity here. Excuse me. See, everyone needs a voice. Everyone needs a voice clinician.
We'll be doing it the whole show, but...
Yeah. We have kind of a unique setup where there's a team approach with speech pathologists and other clinicians and surgeons and scientists, actually, to be able to have a truly multidisciplinary, forward-looking approach towards voice and swallow disorders. It's a sort of thing which has taken years to develop in terms of momentum, and now that it's here, we want to be able to make sure that everybody can avail themselves of it.
Absolutely. And Sherry Zelazny, it's a voice and swallow clinic. And I, you know, most of the time we focus on the voice, but the swallow part of it is important too.
Well, they do go together. The larynx is what we deal with primarily, and the larynx is responsible for breathing, voice, and swallowing. So there may be somebody with a voice disorder with, they might come in to see us because they're hoarse for any number of reasons we can talk about. And then somebody might come in with solely a swallowing impairment. They might be complaining of coughing and choking after meals. Maybe they've had a recent stroke or a recent surgery that has resulted in some swallowing impairments or Parkinson's disease or any number of things that can trigger something to go wrong with swallowing.
With swallowing, sure. And as for the voice, Dr. Daly, who comes to see you? I can envision someone like me in a job where you're on the air, or a singer maybe, but...
I would say, excuse me, there are basically two different major categories of folks who come. Category number one is people who themselves realize that their voices have changed. Obviously, people like singers, people like yourself, people who understand the value of their voice either socially or professionally, and who notice when there's something that has altered. Those are the sorts of people who are going to kind of bring themselves in for care, if you will. The second category is people who are identified usually by their primary care physicians as having a voice change. So the primary care, in the process of interviewing their patient, will notice perhaps that their voice is hoarse or rough or altered, or the patient themselves may offer up that information. But under those circumstances, it's the clinician of whatever variety who says, hey, you know, has your voice changed? Maybe you should get it checked out.
And I tell you what, we have lots of people online to visit with you already, and maybe we should take some calls and just see what's on people's minds. Let's go to Peter in Bailey's Harbor. Peter, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
What a timely show for me. I am an artist, and occasionally I travel doing all sorts of shows with my work. So when I do these shows, I tend to talk a lot to explain things about my work. And what happens when I start using my voice a lot, it starts slowly disappearing. And it gets to a point where it becomes actually difficult to speak, and it disappears somewhere right in my throat. I've been noticing it lately more, but this is something what I guess it seems like I always had an issue with.
Okay.
Is there anything I could do? Is there an exercise, anything? Anyway, is this and is there any literature I could go into to read about this?
Sure.
I need help.
All right. Let's go to Sherry Zelazny.
Sure.
Turn to you.
Well, there's a number of things that you can do right off the bat. One is to do with the travel. And if you're traveling by airplane, that can be very, very drying to the throat. So it's really important to stay very hydrated when you travel. So that means water for sure. But also, there's something we call surface hydration, which lets you get hydration to the vocal folds, and you can do that with steam. A lot of people, professional voice users who travel by plane a lot, will make sure that they have some steam available in the shower where they are going, or even an individual facial steamer, or as simple as over a pot of boiling water. Hard candies, fruit, anything with a high water content that makes you swallow will help you get some moisture into the airway. The other thing is, the more you use your voice, you may be experiencing some vocal fatigue. It may get harder for those muscles to do what they're supposed to do. There's some voice therapy exercises that might be helpful, and some techniques to help you get through longer presentations.
Mm-hmm. So those are some things to start with. And Dr. Daly, anything to add there?
The only other thing to add is that anyone who experiences hoarseness, who is a smoker or who has ever been a smoker, we have an increased level of suspicion for your safety. So, mm-hmm. you know, the difference between laryngeal disorders or a difference and, say, dermatologic disorder, skin disease, is that you can look at the skin kind of anywhere.
Yeah.
But you can't, excuse me, visualize the vocal cords without specialized equipment. And so that's why we always need to look.
So it would be good for me to actually find somebody who... I live in Bailey's Harbor in Door County. It doesn't seem like we have anybody here I could meet, but... I guess I could do a visit to your place in
Madison.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. We because we work closely together, the ear, nose, and throat specialists and the speech pathologists, when people come into our clinic with concerns of hoarseness, you get a comprehensive voice evaluation. You see the speech pathologist and the ear, nose, and throat doctor on the same day. We often start some behavioral management on the same day. But as Dr. Daly indicated, it's so important for us to look. You know, most likely your problems are... will be helped with some behavioral management, but we would hate to miss something that we can help you with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue because it affects everything. It makes me so self-conscious, and I don't want to speak a lot, and speaking is very important.
Obviously, yeah. And if you'd, for appointments, I know that I have a 608 area number for you. It's 608-263-6190. So it's 608-263-6190.
Great.
All right. Good luck, Peter. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking voice disorders today with Dr. Seth Daly and Sherry Zelazny from the Voice and Swallow Clinic at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890. And Dr. Daly's got a cold.
Indeed.
Indeed. All right.
Struggling through.
That's all right. He'll make it. Linda in Pleasant Prairie, it's your turn next. Hi, Linda.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not even sure if this is more of an allergy issue or something, but I'm an ex-smoker. I think I've probably been about 10 years. But I constantly have to clear my throat. There's always something back there, like even right now. Sometimes it gets enough where it does kind of affect my talking, but, I mean, it's always there. Every single day, all day long. And I didn't know if, you know, I mean, I do have a little hay fever, and you know, I take a Zyrtec every day, but I don't know if it's, you know, just because of being a smoker, I messed up my throat, or you know, do you have any suggestions? Or
okay. Sherry, we'll turn to you.
Yeah, well, again, it's so important for us to look at the vocal folds and make sure that we can identify if there's a particular reason why you're coughing or throat clearing. There's three main reasons that people cough and throat clear, and also everybody starts coughing and throat clearing for some reason. It just doesn't happen out of the blue. The three main reasons are asthma, postnasal drip, and reflux, so acid coming up to the level of the larynx. And we like to address those three things first and make sure if you are experiencing them, they're well managed. And then after that, if those three things are managed and there's no other reason that you would be coughing or throat clearing, there's a change that happens in the brain that can make your brain believe that throat clearing is normal. Once you're doing it for a long period of time, because the larynx is the protector of the airway, your brain starts to think, well, maybe I should be doing this all the time if that's the case. And you might have some altered sensory awareness that there's something there, or there might be something there, which is mm-hmm. why we need to look.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. I'm thinking about my Calling All Pets program that I do with Patricia McConnell, and it's pretty much, we can talk before the show, but it's pretty much like the minute or two before you go on the show, it's like, you know, you're clearing your throat. And I think it's just an automatic, sometimes it's just, you know, the brain says, okay, better clear your throat. You don't even think about it.
Right. Some people will cough and clear to kind of jumpstart the larynx and make sure that everything's okay. And again, if you get into a pattern of doing that, your body will soon believe that you're supposed to do that all the time. But well, we can help with that. We have behavioral techniques that help people stop the coughing and the clearing.
Hmm. Well, let's see. Charles in Milwaukee has a question for you, too. So let's go there. Hi, Charles.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I was going to say in regard to those three causes, I think stage fright is another psychological cause of throat clearing. My question has to do with hydration. I'm doing some work with the Voice Foundation out of Philadelphia and the medical clinic here in Milwaukee, mostly regarding singers. But it's been my observation that 20 years ago, we didn't seem to be so concerned about hydration, and now since bottled water has become a commodity, we have to hydrate all the time. We have singers that have to turn around and hydrate midway through programs. We have speakers that have their bottle squirting in their mouths all the time. And my question is it not true that the hydration that we get from our normal eating, our normal drinking, is what really supplies the hydration that helps us immediately, and that drinking water really doesn't do that much for us at the moment.
Okay. Well, what do you think, Dr. Daly?
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting question, and there's evolving science upon this. There was a recent study done, I think, primarily by a kidney doctor looking at hydration and how much water we need to take in and, you know, are we in fact taking in too much? And I think that there's mixed evidence out there right now. With respect to vocalizing, it probably makes the most sense to have good topical hydration for the vocal folds because they are very acutely affected, even as I am right now, by some glop on my vocal cords, excuse me, to oscillate in a non-organized way and to give the perception of a hoarse voice. Furthermore, by performing small amounts of topical hydration with, you know, by sipping water rather than, you know, gulping water or chugging water, that may make more sense from a physiologic standpoint to do it gradually rather than in big chunks.
Makes sense. Thanks, Charles, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. Too Hoarse to Talk? Email us at talk@wpr.org. Our guests today, Dr. Seth Daly and Sherry Zelazny, both from the Voice and Swallow Clinic at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. I'm Larry Mueller. Sarah Carroll, our on-air producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking voice disorders today with Dr. Seth Daly and Sherry Zelazny. Really pleased to have them with us today. And we'll go right back to the phones. And now on to Lynn in New London. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Actually, I don't have a voice question. It's more of a swallow question for you.
Okay.
About 5 years ago, I got a respiratory flu where I just coughed and coughed and coughed until thought my brains were going to come out of my mouth.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. But anyhow, since then, I've had like a swallowing. I can feel like almost like an obstruction or a lump in when I swallow it. It just mechanically doesn't work well. And I'm not old. I'm fairly young, but I had my throat scoped. They didn't find anything wrong. Everything looked good. And I just don't know why this persists. Can you really do stuff where you can damage, where you can feel now. And now every time I swallow, I actually, if I think about it, I feel like it's not working smooth like it used to work.
All right. Sherry, what do you think?
So you're feeling a sensation of a lump in your throat. Is that correct?
Almost like you're swallowing over something or something is like, it's not just moving smooth anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's several reasons that something like that could happen. Sometimes if you've got some swelling in your throat, that can give the sensation of a lump or swallowing over something. There's a muscle at the top of the esophagus that works to open the esophagus when you swallow, and if that muscle is in a spasm state, you will feel that muscle like you're trying to swallow over something. If there's some narrowing in your esophagus for any reason, that will make it more difficult to swallow. It's great that when you say you've been scoped, I'm assuming it's your larynx, your vocal folds.
Yeah, they put a camera right down through my nasal passage and then down into my throat.
Okay, so probably the next step is to have somebody look at your esophagus because it's likely if anything is going on giving you that sensation in your throat is fine that it's at the top of the esophagus that there may be an issue.
Okay.
So need to go back.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn, for calling. Appreciate it. And Jane and Madison, it's your turn next. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I have a complicated story. It's about my mom. She had carotid artery surgery done on the left side in October. And when she woke up from the surgery, she was coughing and coughing and coughing, and that continued. She's worn out. She's 81 when she went into this. She went in pretty good shape, and it has just really brought her down. We did a swallow study, found that the nerve was damaged, the vocal cord nerve. She had an implant put in. She was still coughing and aspirating on a lot of food and even at nighttime when she tried to swallow saliva. And so we had the esophageal stretch done because it was they did a swallow study. Food was pooling at the back of the esophagus as well. They think probably the vocal cord was damaged as well as the esophagus too. The question is she's still not doing very well. I'm wondering if there's things she can do to try to get nerve damage to kind of have that recover. Any thoughts on this?
Okay, Dr. Daly, what do you think?
Sure. So this is not an uncommon event. Anytime one undertakes surgery in the neck like your mom had, there's the risk of injuring important nerves such as those that go to the voice box, to the larynx. We often experience not only voice issues, but concomitant swallowing problems, which often resolve spontaneously in best of cases. As people get over, age 60, the reserves of the nerve and of the whole system tend to deteriorate a little bit, so it's a more susceptible system, if you will.
Uh-huh.
Recovery can be prolonged, but there may be some hope of ongoing recovery, and often that takes 3 to 6 to 9 to 12 months, both for the vocal fold itself and then also for some of the sensory nerves that line the throat that allow it to sense that there's water and brats and all sorts of things in there to be able to be swallowed properly.
Mm-hmm. Anything she can take to try to rejuvenate nerves, vitamins, anything like that?
Yeah.
She's pretty miserable.
Yeah.
There's nothing that I know of that's particular to nerve function.
Okay.
Obviously, good nutrition and trying to stay away from, you know, carcinogens of whatever variety may be advantageous.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank
good,
you.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Jane. We have a few open lines. We can get you on pretty fast at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 as we take a look at voice and swallow disorders as well today on the show with Dr. Seth Daly and Sherry Zelazny of the Voice and Swallow Clinic at UW. And Nick in West Allis is up next, so let's go there. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Well, my question is to Dr. Daly is, I have a five-year-old, and what happens is we thought that he had allergies. He was becoming very extended, real gassy, bloated, and very uncomfortable to the point where he was actually doubling over in pain. So we had him tested for various things, and all his results are there's negative. There's nothing that he's allergic to. But the doctor mentioned about aerophagia, that he's gulping air, which he does at night. I noticed that he's a hard swallower at night. And they never really gave us any type of remedy on how to curb this. And I was just listening to the program, and I thought maybe some good advice would be good.
Yeah,
sure. That's a very interesting dilemma that you have. Probably what would make the most sense, I'm not sure I have a spot diagnosis for you, but what I do have is the suggestion of coming in for some sort of swallowing study to try to assess why it is that your five-year-old might be swallowing air a little bit more than normal. Right. There is a junction, okay, between the throat and the esophagus. There's a muscle there. And sometimes if, for example, that muscle were dysfunctional, instead of being shut most of the time, it might be more open than is normal. And so that would, every time you swallow, instead of, you know, swallowing saliva simply down into your esophagus, you might also get some air down there.
Okay.
And so I would probably start with a swallowing study with a trained professional and kind of go from there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Are there mechanical means to correct some of these problems? Like, you know, I'm wondering of some, I don't know, a mouth guard of some sort or something that can be placed in the mouth to correct something like this?
Some of the mouth guards that we use in otolaryngology are terrific, honestly, for snoring.
Yeah.
So for snoring and for a certain number of sleep disorders, you can use mouth guards to kind of hold the tongue forward and prevent a whole lot of nighttime marital discord. That said, there are different types of devices that we use also in the head and neck. One of them was actually made reference to earlier of an implant that's placed into the voice box at the level of the vocal cord. And that's used to move over a paralyzed vocal cord and restore voice, improve swallow, and improve cough in those who've had one of the nerves injured. So, yeah, there's a whole slew of things that we can kind of put in there to assist the anatomy.
Sutherland and Jefferson, it's your turn now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. An interesting program for me. I'm an auctioneer, and I know that when I drink cold water, that it grossly negatively affects my vocal cords and my ability to auction for long periods of time. So I've learned to drink tap water at the room temperature type thing, and it doesn't seem to affect me. Are there any other things that I should be concerning with, and are any other tactics that I should use to help preserve my voice?
Well, again, when we talk about good hydration, specifically for voice, we like people to think about what we call surface hydration and getting moisture right into the airway. You can't do that with water because you can't put water on your vocal folds or you'll choke. So some of the best ways to keep the larynx and the vocal folds hydrated are, one, with steam. So you could potentially stand over a pot of boiling water before you go to work. And I think a lot of people forget that, like physical exercise, you need a warm-up and a cool-down. And we also encourage our professional voice users to warm up and cool down after. So some voice techniques to get the muscles in good shape, get good strength and flexibility, good surface hydration, and then do it all again afterwards so that you get things back to a good, healthy state after they've been through a workout. I mean, in terms of an auctioneer, think about maybe running a marathon. You don't just stop and walk home. You stop and rest, and you rehydrate, and you stretch your muscles again. And we encourage that for the vocal folds and the voice as well.
What kind of an what would be an example of a kind of a warm up that you would do? Sing a little bit, hum.
Well, since I'm not a singer, I'm not going to say we sing a little bit, although we do have professional singing help in our clinic. We think of the vocal folds are muscles, so we treat them like muscles, and they need to be strong and flexible and healthy. So taking a hum, like you said, for example, and making sure it's with good technique, and taking that through a pitch glide, so up and down your pitch range, gets the muscles some stretch, just like you'd be stretching out a muscle before some physical exercise. So that's one of the aspects that we would help people do is learn how to stretch the muscles and learn how to get them in a good, healthy working order.
That's great.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Steve in Wapaka is up next, I believe. Steve, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious. My mom says that she can't swallow any kind of pill, no matter how small it is, without taking some food with it. Is that a physical problem, or is it more of a mental problem, more in her head, or what's that all about?
Sure, that's actually a pretty common phenomenon, especially, again, in people over 60 years old. The swallowing mechanism is sort of like a bunch of ports and muscles that are working together to make air go to the right place and make food go to the right place. So earlier in the program, we were talking about the muscle at the junction of the throat and the esophagus. And that tends to be a little bit overactive in certain individuals and can prevent the passage of large, firm things, which, you know, generally speaking, we don't really encounter in nature. You know, pills are sort of a more modern phenomenon that the body wasn't necessarily designed for. So it's not necessarily surprising that we have trouble moving things like that down into the esophagus. So, number one, it's probably not all in her head, but it is in her throat.
Okay.
I would, you know, for many people, it's just sort of an irritation. And as long as it's that and you can live with it, then that's, you know, no big deal. But if it becomes more problematic, then obviously you should seek a little bit of help.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Heidi in Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, doctors. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My situation is, a few years ago, I went to a football game. It was Wisconsin versus Purdue, back when Ron Dayne was still playing. Mm-hmm. And for the first time ever, I threw out my voice. Being a Badger among Boilermakers, I had to make enough noise for everybody. And I found that the next day I had no voice, and I found that ever since then, I've had a lot of trouble maintaining my voice. And the older I get, the more often that I'm hoarse, especially in cold weather. And I work in a freezer part-time. People do notice. They say, you know, are you getting sick again? I'll say, no, my voice just does this in the cold or in the winter. So I'm wondering, did I do some damage? And then is it being compounded by the fact that I still sing and I still, you know, my voice does get fatigued much easier? Or is it just getting older?
Okay, yeah, that's, you know, that is also a reasonably common scenario that you describe. The vocal cords are really, they, as Sherry was saying, there's a big component, an important component of them that is muscle. There's also a more superficial component that's kind of like a shock absorber. And that shock absorber layer can be damaged over time from different things, from lots of voice use, from smoking, from, you know, a whole number of different things. Sometimes if you've had an event, maybe it was a bleed, which can certainly happen. We often see people after Badger football games in the voice clinic who have had bleeds in the vocal cords from being fabulous fans. And so what can happen is you lose a little bit of the shock-absorbing ability, and then because of that, you have a more inefficient system. You have to push harder. If you're working in a freezer, that sounds like a lot of background noise. So if you have a lot of background noise, unlike this radio studio, which is just fabulous, you're going to be fighting. You're going to be fighting all that background noise and driving yourself to kind of a higher vocal pressure, and that's going to make it very fatiguing for you.
So, okay.
So, in other words, I don't know the answer, but what I can tell you is that there is a reasonable possibility that that you can be helped, whether it's through simple behavioral therapy, some ongoing exercises, as Sherry was talking about. It would probably be worthwhile having a look and seeing if there's anything anatomic that we can assist you with as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Good luck.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Boy, you hear that a lot with the basketball tournament just over now. Bo Ryan, the UW Badger coach, and other coaches, after the game when they're interviewed, sometimes it's like, all right, it was a good game. You know, that's that's about all they can get out.
Yeah. There's a NFL football coach named John Gruden who is a very sort of gruff personality to begin with. But every time he's interviewed, I just can't wait to get my, you know, his cell phone number, because he's just, we want to get him into the voice clinic. He sounds so terrible.
We have more callers online. We've got an email from Marty in Madison, who's a singer in a heavy metal band and puts a good amount of strain on his voice to get the distorted scream sounds with heavy metal. Needs a lot of rest to recover from an intense practice session. Are there any tips or tricks you would have for a speedy recovery? He says, my vocal instructor just tells me to quit doing that kind of music, but that would not be my first choice. As it is now, I just go a few days without speaking. My sign language is getting better, but I'd like to be able to practice 2 days in a row. Any ideas?
Well, we've got a lot of ideas about that. First of all, again, because it's such a great physical activity, we really encourage people to be in good physical health, have good nutrition, and take good care of themselves when they're in a profession such as this. The singing voice, no matter what kind of singing voice you're, what kind of singing you're doing, is the instrument, and the speaking voice has to be cared for as well. So you have to think about what you're doing with your speaking voice when you're not singing, what kinds of irritants you're exposing yourself to potentially. And again, taking good care, having a good vocal hygiene program, having good vocal exercises, a warm-up, a cool-down, evaluating your equipment to make sure that you're not putting more physical strain on yourself because of the equipment that you're using. And there are correct ways to scream. So we can actually help people learn to scream and not damage the vocal folds. So that's the other aspect of that.
So Marty might do well to give you folks a call and come in for a little session or two.
Well, with anybody who notices trouble with their voice, we don't think anybody should actually lose their voice no matter what they're doing. So if you're having a rehearsal and you lose your voice for 2 days, that's not right. So we always want to take a look at the vocal folds and then figure out what the best way is to help and get somebody in a good behavioral exercise program.
And I should mention appointments again, just to let people know, Marty and anybody else for that matter. It's area code 608-263-6190. And Mike in Manitowoc has been waiting a little while there. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
See, after a number of years of having swallowing problems, I had a scope, endoscope.
Yes.
And they did dilate the lower part right above my stomach, but in addition to that, they diagnosed me with, I think it's eosinophilic esophagitis. Mm-hmm. Are you mm-hmm. familiar with that?
Yep.
And they did put me on some Flovent, and I kind of got the the idea from them that this was going to be a lifelong thing for me now. And then I was reading, too, I'm exposed to a boric acid pretty regular and denatured alcohol in a flux solution on my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing this for, 9 years or so. And I was wondering, that said, it may cause mucous membrane problems. And I was just wondering if you thought there might be a correlation there. And if, in fact, you think that this eosinophilic esophagitis is something that needs to be treated the rest of my life, or if there's a cure for it.
Sure. That's a good question. Eosinophilic esophagitis is basically a disorder of inflammation, where certain cells of the immune system are called into action in the area of the esophagus when they're kind of not supposed to. And so that can create feelings of difficulty swallowing, pain, discomfort, under certain circumstances narrowing, as you're indicating. It's probably not something that people carry their entire life. In other words, it probably has a burnout period later on. But given that this is a primary disease of the esophagus, which is not seen necessarily with super great frequency, it may be worthwhile you seeing and continuing on seeing a GI specialist, since they probably see more of that than we do. With respect to the boric acid and the alcohol, I can only suspect that those are not good for you, and that if you have any ability to wear a respirator mask, which can offer you some protection, or if to make sure that the places wherever you work is up to date with OSHA standards, that's very, very important, because chronic exposures like that can cause problems.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Deb in Westboro is a middle school teacher who's been home for the past couple of days. She emailed us because she lost her voice due to a chest cold. Hasn't been able to talk normally since a week ago today. She's trying to not to talk at all, but has been whispering when she needed to say something. Her question is whispering better than trying to speak at a normal volume? I thought I heard years ago that whispering can be more damaging than just trying to talk normally.
We do feel that whispering can be more damaging. When you're whispering, you're kind of keeping the larynx in a suspended, or the vocal folds in a suspended position, and we always want the brain and the vocal folds to be coordinated, and your brain to be thinking that, yes, you are looking for voice every time you open your mouth. Teachers, we know, are the highest risk voice profession for voice disorders, so you're not alone. And again, we don't think anybody should ever lose their voice, even with a cold. There's ways to keep your voice healthy through a cold. Probably you have, extraordinary vocal needs during the day, and we would definitely encourage an evaluation because we don't want to see you get into this repeated pattern of voice loss and end up with some damage to the vocal folds.
Okay. And do you have a website, by the way, that people can go to?
You can get information about our clinic at the UW Hospital and Clinics website.
Okay.
And if you go to specialty clinics, either otolaryngology or the Voice and Swallow Clinic, and there'll be information there.
And your number again for appointments is I hope I've been giving this number correctly, 608-263-6190. I tell you what. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. And we're going to be staying on with our health topics and talk about pathways to health and healing with green medicine. That's coming up next. But in the meantime, big thanks to Dr. Seth Daly and to Sherry Zelazny, both from the Voice and Swallow Clinic at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. She is an assistant. Seth is an assistant professor in the surgery department in the School of Medicine and Public Health. Sherry is a senior clinical speech pathologist and adult voice manager. Really, they know their stuff, and it's really always great to have them along. And we'll get them back, and we will do this again. But coming up, pathways to health and healing with green medicine. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.